Welcome to the Main Damey Podcast, the podcast where we at themaindamey.com talk about all things pop culture and whatever else is on our minds. Check out the website at themaindamey.com or visit us on Twitter at twitter.com/themaindamey. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email us at themaindamey@gmail.com. Welcome back to the Main Damey Podcast. This is a very special podcast this time around. As we've done in the past, I think we've done for Captain America Civil War, and I think for Suicide Squad, we did an episode completely devoted to those movies. And this week, we are going to continue that with Stephen King's It. Past week or so, we've posted a couple of articles based around the release of the new remake. Joining me on this episode, as we usually have, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. And before we get started, in my research while looking up all the actors, I found out that they're apparently making a Carmen Sandiego TV show?
I saw that too.
In 2019, so confused.
Because, with the kid?
It's Finn, right? Finn Wolf.
Yeah, Wolfhard? Finn's playing player, whatever that means.
Right. The kid from Mike from Stranger Things, Richie Tozier. He is in the
And the girl
film.
From, I believe it's Jane the Virgin, is playing Carmen Sandiego, or at least voicing her.
Okay.
I think that's Gina Rodriguez. I think that's what
well,
she's
didn't
from.
They, in the 90s, wasn't there like a game show for Carmen Sandiego?
The game show was awesome.
I remember that.
Had Rockapella. Yeah. I mean,
Rockapella, that's who they were, yes.
is it going to be like that, or is it going to be
I
an
have
actual
no
movie?
Idea. It's one of those thin IMDb pages that just has like the name of two actors and a couple of stuff. I could probably research it deeper, but I just clicked off. I was like, this is an interesting thing to open with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to looking at the other actors.
Nice.
To see. So, yeah, so.
I like that's a good way to open up.
Yeah, Carmen Sandiego coming back. Hopefully it's a game show and not like some kind of cartoon, which is always strange. When they did it with, since it's a board game, essentially, or...
They turned it into a cartoon in the 90s, too, didn't they?
Yeah, and it was weird, because...
I don't remember ever watching it, but I remember, like, it existing.
Yeah, essentially, I think I've seen a couple episodes, but the problem they run into is that it essentially has a player character that's the gumshoe,
mm-hmm.
but how do you represent that in a cartoon? You know, it's kind of like if they ever try to do... Short tangent. If they ever tried to do a Legend of Zelda cartoon or anything like that, you know, Link never talks.
Well, he did in the 80s cartoon.
Yeah,
and
but
say,
I mean, like...
Excuse me, princess. Like, all the time.
But those weren't any good.
That's true.
It's the Link one will. Issue. It's like anything outside of Captain Lou Albano with Mario.
Right.
You know, outside of saying, it's-a-me, and aha, woohoo! He doesn't really say much. So, it's always hard to make that thing stuff.
True, I suppose.
Anyway, scary clowns.
Okay, so that's what Mark's been up to. Danny, you've been up to lately? Anything?
Have I been up to anything lately? No, hitting the gym like an absolute savage. I haven't really been anything closer and closer to the wedding date. Making sure I got my ring. I guess that's exciting.
It fits.
Why is there such a disparity between guys' and girls' rings?
Yeah, I know. Mine I think cost like $200. I think Lynn's wound up like $500.
Mine was $70.
Oh, nice.
is it made of copper?
No, it's tungsten.
Tungsten.
Mine's
that's
tungsten actually nice.
Too.
I got to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, we got something. we got a package, so this could be a part of the podcast, like my exciting thing. I have nothing exciting that's happened.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
The box. Your wife's pretty. But my future wife's pretty. Who's the problem?
Yeah.
Oh, he's got a
I'm guessing it ranges by jeweler, I would assume, for...
Probably.
Yeah, and now that you got your yours for $20, I'm kind of mad at myself.
Yeah. We could always just spend a few bucks and try to win it in a coin, one of those crane machines.
Yeah. Oxford. That's right.
Let's say that's where I got the green.
So I guess we should probably get back on track.
As I said, scary clowns. Do it.
Scary clowns. Yes, Stephen King's It. The 1,000 plus page tome that he released in 1985 came out with a remake this past week. So I think, you know, everybody, I think I've mentioned quite a few times on the website and probably on the podcast that, you know, it was part of my summer project was to read that book, and I was happy to say that I finished with about 3 weeks to spare. But I want to kind of get your guys, you know, how you've approached this this remake, and you know what your knowledge base was for the movie slash, you know, story itself, and what your expectations were going into this.
Can we set a guideline first?
Do whatever you want to do.
Are we sticking to just the movie that came out and where that story ended, or the fact that maybe I think at least two of us, I think Dan's seen it too, saw the full miniseries, which explains the second half of the story?
Mark, it's your world. We're all just living in it. Right, so why don't you approach it the way you want to?
I am extremely excited about the second movie, if and when that does come out.
Whoa. Yeah, no, you got to step back. Okay, now I have to make guidelines for you. Okay.
I just asked that, and you said it's my world.
I thought you could do this chronologically, but apparently you can't. Okay, so, Mark. Point one, what is your first experience with Stephen King's It?
Okay. I saw the miniseries when it came out in 1990 when it was on ABC. And being all of 5-6 years old probably at the time, it did scare the living hell out of me. But over the years, you know, as I've seen it a couple times since then, you know, it just... seemed a little bit more sillier as I got older. So that was my first experience with it, was my family sitting down and watching it, because my mother is a huge Stephen King fan. So, yeah, I guess, is that as far as I'm allowed to go, Anthony?
You could go as far as you want, but you started off at how you're anticipating the movie that hasn't been cast yet. So I needed to bring you back. It's interesting that you said that you actually watched this when it originally aired, because I don't remember watching. I remember watching a lot of the Stephen King miniseries that came out during the 90s, Langoliers, The Stand, when they aired. Yeah. But I don't remember watching this, and maybe it was the one time my parents ever showed restraint in what they let me watch, because I was all of 5, and I guess they felt this was a little too much. For 5, yeah. So I actually hadn't watched the miniseries until after I watched the new movie that came out. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. So Dan, what about you? What's your experience with Stephen King's It?
I've never seen the miniseries until, I think I want to say I was like 14 when I saw it. And that's pretty much it. I never read the book. I'd seen a few reviews on it. My favorite review, I think I've told you guys, the Nostalgia Critic did a review on it, and he pretty much just rips it apart. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's as bad as most of the reviews I've seen. We've talked about this, and it definitely doesn't hold up though.
No.
Yeah, going back and checking it out, it doesn't hold up. Tim Curry's pretty much the only part that I remember from that movie when I saw it. But that's it. I've only seen reviews. I've seen the miniseries when I was younger. And
you haven't seen it since, though?
No, I hadn't seen it since. So I was going into this one fresh.
Okay.
pretty much, I went with a mutual friend of ours, and he knew everything. He was like, oh, this is the part when this happens, and this is, this is the part where that happens.
That's Dave, so, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he read the book?
No, he didn't read the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's just pretty well versed in the miniseries, I suppose?
Yeah, he was just, I think he had seen it a bunch of times.
Okay, interesting. So,
yeah. He was the one telling me, oh, I think this is when so-and-so does this, they meet this guy, blah, blah, blah. So
that's a long time. So he was doing this throughout the entire movie? He was talking to you and saying these things while you guys were watching the movie?
Yeah.
Wow, I would have been so annoyed.
Well, I've gone on record as saying I'm a terrible person to go to the movies with because I will do the same thing, especially with Marvel movies. I'll be like, oh, that, you know, that means this, that means that, and I always apologize afterwards, no matter who I'm with. So this was Dave's Marvel movie.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we don't go to the movies with you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, on that, I only remembered the big moments, really. So I was really excited when they started popping up. Mm-hmm. I don't know, coming from just reading the books, and if that, you know, if you were anticipating anything, like the opening scene for me, the one good jump scare, you know, in the middle, you know, those two scenes, I was really looking forward to and really happy what they did with it. But coming from, I haven't read how much he differs from what we saw on screen, either in the miniseries or the TV show, or, the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I should say, like I mentioned, that I hadn't seen the miniseries until I had actually seen this, but I've seen enough clips. You know, I've seen that Nostalgia Critic review and a bunch of other things. I was actually listening to a podcast this past week leading up to it. I believe it's called Castle Rock TV Podcast, which originally was set up to, you know, talk about the new Castle Rock TV, I think it's a Hulu series or an Amazon series that's going to come out, which is basically a series that takes place within the Stephen King universe. But in their first few episodes, they kind of did review, like first three episodes, they talked about the book, then the fourth episode, they did the miniseries, and then they went into their reviews of the movie. But so I kind of got myself acquainted with the miniseries that way. In terms of the book, the miniseries is very by the book adaptation. They did a real, for as dated as it is, they did a pretty good job of putting, book to the screen, for better and worse. I mean, the book is really good. I enjoyed the book a great deal, but it's flawed. It's like a flawed masterpiece, basically. There's a lot of stuff in there that could be, removed, and you wouldn't really miss it. I mean, everyone talks about the kid orgy scene of something that's completely unnecessary, and it is unnecessary, but there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that, you know, paints a picture of Derry, the town, that is interesting information, but it's, you know, there's a reason why this thing is, well, when I read it on the Kindle, it wound up being about 1,500 pages. And, you know, that makes it a much more difficult adaptation. But, yeah, there's definitely things in there that I didn't love, that, you know, the miniseries kept in, that the new one might not have kept in. We'll get to that a little bit later. Yeah, like I said, there's good things and bad things about the book. But I was glad that I had read it ahead of time, because I thought the reading of the book was able to inform kind of some things that kind of fill in the blanks at some points, of the movie that I feel like they didn't have a chance to kind of fully cover. I was super, super pleased, and I was super anticipating, this movie, the point where I was, you know, every time on my commute home, I was just watching YouTube videos of videos pertaining to it, whether it was reviews of the miniseries or just kind of videos about pertaining into stuff in the book. But yeah, I was, so by the time it is the week came, I was fully invested in the story. So that was my experience.
I thought it was interesting how you mentioned the book took a lot of time getting to know Derry, the town.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie did a pretty good job with that relatively quickly. The one kid, I don't remember all the children's names, but the heavyset kid, you know, he's doing the research. What's that?
Ben Hanscom.
Yeah, he was doing research on the town, and
yeah,
you see some of its residents are really creepy people. The drugstore clerk,
mm-hmm,
obviously Deb's father, and you get to know the town through those characters as well as some of the research that was done. But I think they did a pretty good job of not dwelling too much on it. Just from what you're saying, how much of the book would you say they spent dealing with just the town? A couple chapters?
So what they would do is they would kind of, they would cover it in what they called interludes in between chapters. And it was actually Mike, the black kid, that would be the one we would be finding it out through. Cause he's essentially like a historian sort of thing of the town of Derry when he gets older. Enough to spoil chapter two, the movies. But so he goes through details of basically the 27 year marks and, you know, how it has affected the town of Derry within those few times. And they do very quickly touch upon just about each one. I know they definitely touch upon the black spot fire, and they talk about the ironworks explosion.
Yeah.
In the movie, I don't remember if they touch upon the gangsters that were, you know, gunned down in the street, or I know they talk about the very briefly about the settlement that just up and disappeared in the early history of those. So they do a pretty good job of I kind of figured they would, you know, very, very briefly touch upon them. I was surprised they touched upon as many as they did. I figured definitely the Black Spot, fire and the Ironworks, which is a huge part of the book. They mention it a number of times. And it's actually where Mike, the grounds where that Ironworks building was where actually where Mike first encounters it. In the book, and that's a little bit different. But we're getting super ahead of ourselves because I want to, you know, we haven't even talked about what we thought of the movie. So I want to talk to Dan. So Dan,
right?
Saw the movie. What did you think?
I love it's my favorite movie of the year so far. I thought again going in, I was hooked from what I saw from the trailers because I thought, remembering the miniseries, I was like, it wasn't scary to me. It was more silly and just kind of, like, weird. And then I saw the trailer, and you see Pennywise come up from the basement, the flooded basement, and the way he rushes towards the camera, I was like, oh, shit, that's actually a little creepy. That was pretty scary. I can see where that would be scary to someone. So going into it, the kids are fantastic. Bill Skarsgård was great as Pennywise. I thought it was cool how they don't just dwell on Pennywise. You know, it's really the kids growing up in summertime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought everything was done perfectly.
Great.
In my opinion, that's obviously. I wouldn't give it a perfect score, and the more I think about it, I kind of think like, but why wouldn't I give it a perfect score? I try to find something wrong with it, and it's really hard to come up with something.
Okay. Yeah. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, so, it's probably my second movie of the year behind Dunkirk. It definitely passes Spider-Man, for me. What I really enjoyed is what Dan touched on. The one downside to the miniseries was most of the kids, in that were pretty bad, including Seth Green, who's in the miniseries. And these kids were great. You know, obviously being the age they are, there's some moments that they probably was like, oh, this is as good of a take as we're going to get on this. So we have to take it. But there are other scenes where they're just, you can tell these were, you know, that they've had experience, and some of them have experience in horror movies before this. So it was nice that they went that route instead of just trying to get maybe some names in here outside of, I guess, who's the only one really? Finn, that has any mainstream? The kid that played Richie?
Yep, Finn Wolfhard, which is an awesome last name.
Yes, exactly.
He was born to be a star.
Yeah, so what I liked about this movie is I love the look of Pennywise, because the Tim Curry version was closer to being like a Bozo the Clown sort of, you know, generic clown, like sort of trying to get on that vibe of people that are afraid of circus clowns. This, down to the way the lines and the face paint and the way his facial, it was just, he was as good of an actor as Tim Curry is. Just the way Skarsgård just inhabited what Pennywise is supposed to be, from what I gather. I haven't read the book. It was the best part of the movie. If you get that wrong, it ruins everything you're going for. And it was a pretty spectacular performance in that. And every scene he popped up in, he was creepy. He was exactly what you needed for whatever emotion they were trying to draw out as they were seeing each of the kids. We're seeing him separately. And then I gotta say, I didn't think there was going to be a jump scare, but I was anticipating the moment in the garage, and it delivered, 100%.
Yeah,
that scene was fantastic.
And
very tense.
What it did was, it kept guessing, because I was seeing parts that I didn't really remember from the miniseries, and just seeing, okay, I don't remember this, and then it would click into something I remembered. I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, they just did this more memorable. The only part that sort of took me out of it for a little bit was the CGI dancing scene, because it looked a little too CGI.
At the end of the film?
Yeah, when the thing comes down and he starts dancing in front of the fire, then whatever, I guess that's supposed to be hell or whatever. That just looked a little too fake to me. And it kind of ruined how even everything else was fake, obviously, in CGI, but it looked much more real than that scene, and that was the only one that took me out of the movie.
It seemed like they're definitely going for a visual aesthetic in that scene. Just because, you know, he's dancing like almost like a marionette, and the camera is moving in a way so that when he's dancing, his head isn't moving in the screen, like in the frame. His head is being perfectly still and everything else is. So I think it's just like, do you buy that visual aesthetic or you don't?
And it
was a little off-putting. But I think maybe that's sort of what they were going for. Maybe they were trying to be a little off, you know, maybe unsettling, I guess, is kind of what I'm going
for. But it definitely, the adaptation blew me away and was better than anything I thought it would be. I didn't see many trailers for it. I've just seen the photos of the, you know, the new Pennywise. And, you know, it's got me, you know, greatly anticipated for what they can do with the second half, which gets a little more out there. Especially if I remember the exact end, but I'm not going to spoil that. We can talk about that off air. And because since you read the book. But they did their job with this movie.
Right.
The pacing, the way it made you feel for each of the characters. I mean, the only one I didn't have any real emotional attachment to was Richie, but I guess he's supposed to be the comic relief for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But yeah, it gave you something to grab onto for each of the kids, and that's very good. I even like the callback jokes of New Kids on the Block. I don't know if that's in the book, but
no. Well, obviously, the New Kids on the Block didn't exist in 1995.
Yeah, so
When the book came out.
Yeah, I didn't know if the book came out during their height or not.
No,
but yeah, the little times when they did a callback to it were just great. That was really well done, and, you know, at least for the older people in the audience, it was like one of those things in Zootopia, where they would make adult jokes, like the DMV joke and all that, mm-hmm. where the adults laughed a lot harder than the kids. I found that for the younger, like, teens and kids in the audience, they didn't laugh much at the New Kids on the Block, but you could hear really big laughter, especially from the couple next to me, with the New Kids on the Block stuff, and I always like when you inject a little humor that sort of threads throughout the whole movie.
Right. Yeah, I was surprised at how funny this movie is. And one of the reasons is definitely Finn Wolfhard's performance as Richie. Yeah. And that's one of the major changes from the book that was an improvement on the book. In the book, Richie is the funny kid in that he does voices, which does not sound funny at all.
Yeah. That sounds like more of a... That the book is set in the 60s, right?
1958.
Okay. And this is set in the 80s, so maybe the difference in time is what made them do that choice.
Right. And go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, he does do some impressions from here and there.
Very briefly,
They're not over the top,
which
makes it better. Because if he's clearly going for something over the top, it kind of takes you out of it. And you're like, all right. But at the same time, they're kids, so I mean, that's what kids usually do. They go over the top with things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they turned him into like an impressionist, into like a wise ass, which definitely appreciated, because I hated Richie in the book. He's one of my least favorite characters.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters was in the book was Ben, and which was the overweight kid, which I wanted to see more from him in the movie. Because when I'm reading the book, the whole thing, like Bill is like the de facto leader and the hero of the story, but there's no reason that Ben isn't the hero of the story. That's the one thing is like. Because Bill in the book is kind of one dimensional, to be honest. He's the hero because he's the hero, because the book says that he is, and all the kids look up to him because I guess he's taller. But Ben is like is a much more interesting character in the book, and I just wanted him, just so much want him to be the hero. Like you guys said. All the young actors were great in it. I said in my review that they all kind of shined, and specifically the girl that played Beverly.
Yeah, sure.
She had a lot to do, a lot of grown up stuff that she had to handle, and I think she did amazing. And she looks just like Amy Adams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's uncanny. It'd be a perfect match if they got her for the second chapter.
Yeah, I think they're talking Jessica Chastain, possibly, because Andy Muschietti directed Mama, which she was in.
Right.
But going back to Bill Skarsgård, I liked his performance. There's one thing that comes off, just from the concept idea of that him being so scary and just so obviously creepy, kind of puts into question why would Georgie even talk to him Right. Because he's so obviously scary. It's kind of like when, you know, this is kind of a tangent. Well, it most definitely is a tangent. reading through the recent Captain Hydra storyline of Captain America.
Secret Empire.
Well, before that, when it was just the Captain America storyline, they're doing flashbacks of it, and you know he thinks he gets into Hydra because his mom starts going to like these meetings, and it's really just like a neighborhood watch, quote unquote. But the neighborhood watch's logo is the Hydra logo, which is, you know, an octopus with a skull for a head. It's like, that just right off the bat, that doesn't look like it's a neighborhood watch.
It looks safety.
Yeah, it looks pretty evil. Yeah. So why would you think it's anything but evil? And that's basically what I felt about that. But Skarsgård was good. I wanted him in a few more scenes, and I mentioned this in the review, where he's just trying to charm people rather than, because he's, you know, he, in that one scene, in the first scene, the famous sewer grate scene with Georgie, he's charismatic and he's charming Georgie into kind of, you know, letting down his guard. But throughout the rest of the movie, he's just kind of like this force of nature. Mm-hmm. So I wish he had more moments where he's, you know, he's not at 11, you know, like at a 6 or 7, and he kind of lulls these kids into a false sense of security or whatever.
I disagree. I loved it.
No, I'm not saying I didn't love it. I wanted him to have those acting moments, really, for his sake. Because Tim Curry's performance is all that, really. He's that charming. And so I wanted at least one more scene where he can, they go back a little bit towards the end when he's starting to, you know, spoiler, this is a spoiler podcast, so I'm not going to say spoiler alert, but when he's kind of like bargaining with the kids.
Right.
He's having that moment. But I would love another one in the middle. Like maybe, you know, expand upon the scene in the Newbolt Street house when he's, you know, preying on Eddie at that moment. Mm-hmm. I would have loved a scene where he gets to actually, you know, say some lines there. But it was a really good, and you guys mentioned that the projector scene in the garage.
Yeah.
And that, it's amazing how effective that scene is when we saw so much of it in the trailers.
Yeah. The kids make that.
Yeah.
Because you feel their terror when they're like, shut it off, shut it off, shut it off, and they're just screaming to shut it off.
Yeah.
And you like, the claustrophobia kind of sets in because, you know, they're in the garage and it's, everything's just, you feel the weight of it in that scene. Just, everyone's so afraid. I felt real tense. Oh, this is great, you know. I hadn't seen a horror movie that actually made me that excited in a scene.
Mm-hmm.
It was just well done, and he disappears from the frame, and you think you're safe, and the next thing you know, he just pops out of the projector.
Yeah,
and not only does he pop out, he's enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene goes from 0 to 60 in split second.
Yeah, that scene when it happened, I know I jumped. I'm a jumpy person, but I know I looked over at Ant and we sort of just nodded and went, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
Was that in the novel?
No. In the novel, that scene would have been, they're looking like through like a picture book or like a photo album, I think, of like old pictures from Derry. And it's nothing quite like that. It's more like there's a scene like that in the miniseries.
Yeah. That was one of the two scenes I was excited for.
Georgie's got a scene where they're looking at Georgie's picture book and he winks. But then there's a scene where Mike brings a photo album of old pictures to them, and they're looking through it, and that's, and like Tim Curry, you know, pops out of a picture, and he starts talking to him, telling him, "Well, I'll kill you all," I think he says.
Yeah.
That would be the equivalent scene, and that, they don't have an interaction with Pennywise in the book like that. Like he's not like, "I'll kill you all" and all that kind of stuff. But if that would have been the scene equivalent.
I think another thing I enjoyed about it was what they did. They show each kid what they're afraid of, and they took some pretty cool opportunities to show what each kid was afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
I like the library scene with the headless child chasing him around, and then the next thing you know, it's Pennywise chasing him around. And the sewer scene with the bully, you know, being chased by pretty much, I guess they were zombies. It's something I wasn't expecting because that stuff's not in the miniseries. So.
Right.
It was cool, and I remember in the miniseries they used Universal Monsters. Because right, I guess in the 50s those were big at the time.
Yeah. Right. That's in the book.
It was in the book too?
Yeah, Wolfman, the Mummy, Frankenstein's Monster. I don't think Dracula, but
they were also in the miniseries.
Yeah, they definitely had a mummy.
Yes.
I think they had a werewolf man too, yeah. A werewolf.
Yeah.
And then like I think Eddie gets attacked by showers.
Yeah. And then Pennywise pops up through the drain.
Yeah.
I think it was cool, you know, they had a leper chasing the kid who's afraid of being dirty.
And that's in the book.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think that's much more effective than a mummy.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, he gets chased by a leper who's offering him a blowjob for $10. And a lot of people suggest that Eddie's fear is his own sexuality.
Oh, okay.
So
I mean, those prices back then, that's pretty expensive.
Yeah. So, it might even be like a nickel or something like that. It's supposed to be like a leper hobo that's offering him sex, and I guess the undertones of the Eddie character is that he's actually closeted homosexual.
Okay. That's pretty cool too. I mean, yeah. I don't think it would have worked for the movie necessarily.
Right. And I think they kind of allude to it in the miniseries, but he's just like, he's not homosexual. He's just kind of asexual. He still lives with his mom and stuff like that. Eddie, when he gets older.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, no, that's definitely during Stephen King's cocaine days.
Right.
You know, when he was probably writing 50 pages a day instead of the 5 that he says you have to at least do to become a writer. Like that.
I enjoyed how, I know in the miniseries it switches back and forth between when they're children and when they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
I like how they just took the time here to do just the children.
Right.
You get much more of a bond.
Yeah, and the book does the back and forth too. So my only thing is that towards the end of the book, they're starting the timelines are starting to mirror each other a little bit. So the only thing I'm afraid of is that they're going to start to feel a little repetitive.
Okay.
So towards the end, I'm afraid that chapter 2, the end of chapter 2 is going to feel very much like chapter 1. But if I had to admit, like the ending of this movie isn't quite like the child ending of the book, so maybe there's enough difference in it. And I think you could see that in the miniseries because they kind of do that because they have the ending of the child part in part 1, and then they have the ending of the adult part in part 2 in the miniseries. Mm-hmm. And I think you could see that, you know, where that mirroring, when you pull it apart and put it, you know, in different ends of the story, how it could feel a little repetitive.
Yeah, I think doing one in one chapter and one in the other is a little more effective for the first movie. Because you don't, if you haven't read the books or seen the miniseries, you believe that the kids, one of the kids may not make it. You know, but if I'm remembering the way it goes back and forth, you pretty much know they all live.
Right. Seeing them in present time.
Yeah. So unless it's some goofy time magic occurs, you know, when watching the miniseries, you don't feel the kids are in any peril. But that final scene where he makes them the offer, you know, of I'll take Bill and then I'll go to sleep and you guys can just leave, you know, is more powerful if you don't see, you know, the adult stuff first. And that's another place where this is a better adaptation than the miniseries.
Yeah, so, I think you're right. It makes much more of an impact. You get that bond with the Losers Club.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing them with their problems in the, because that was in the miniseries. Some of them had big problems, if I remember correctly, when they grew up. So now you get to just see them as innocent kids and see them grow up a little bit prematurely, obviously, having to fight a killer entity. So.
Yeah, and the thing I would ask Ant, too, and I think we discussed this after seeing the movie, Beverly and her father, they went a little more child molesty in the movie than the book?
Yeah, in the book, he literally just beats the shit out of her. Like, it's still pretty dark, but he, I mean, he gets a little weird at the end, but he's kind of already been kind of taken over by Pennywise. So he's like, he starts accusing her of, you know, doing things with the boys down in the Barrens. You know, this is before the orgy scene in the sewer. And he tells her that he has to check her hymen to make sure she's still a virgin. So that's that. But like I said, he's already been taken over by Pennywise. I think you could, like, she notices that his eyes are like, you know, like gold over or whatever. Up until that point, he just beats the shit out of her. Like, he, like, just punches her in the stomach and the face, and it's pretty brutal. Like, you're sitting there reading this, is like, how does a 12-year-old girl, like, take this kind of thing? Like, if like an adult male punches a girl straight in the face, is like, how does he just not knock her across the room out cold?
Some are tougher than others, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think they just skipped the whole possession thing, or are you supposed to assume that?
Well, you know, Pennywise shows up pretty quickly right after that, so who knows? Maybe he was there the whole time, maybe he was pushing it along. Because there are some scenes, like, you know, basically every adult in this movie is a shit, right? Save for maybe Mike's grandfather, who kind of tells him. He doesn't give him great advice, but he's not.
none of them are very good parents.
I mean, you know, George's parents we see very briefly. Bill's parents we see very briefly. And only his dad after George was missing.
I touched on it earlier, the drugstore clerk. There was an audible, like, groan in the audience.
Yeah.
Just like both, everyone just goes, and that's the right response, though. I mean, that was really gross.
But she does look like just like Lois Lane. She looks like Amy Adams.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think that. But I don't think they knew about that, though. That's 1988.
Yeah, that has.
It doesn't look like Margot Kidder, that's for sure.
I wonder if that was something put into the script.
I don't know. I just thought of that just now.
What?
I don't know. I just thought of, I just made that connection just now, so I don't know.
Yeah.
That blew my mind. That was a good one. But like I said, I can't think of many things wrong with this movie.
What'd you guys think of the ending? Like the whole children floating and...
I wasn't expecting it. I figured when... They never really explained it in the miniseries either, when you'll float too, they all float down. Figured that was, they float in the water, they're dead.
Right.
But this literally floating in midair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the first time, well, outside of Pennywise's mouth, that you see anything that could be deemed as magic, or some kind of thing,
Right.
In that, that's not just Pennywise.
Right.
It's the... I thought it was a very good visual when you first see it. That was really well done. Including down to the debris that is on the ground, is really good. I mean, they make that raincoat stand out because it's supposed to stand out, but just the things like the wheelchair and, other items that you're like, oh, these were all kids. Over the years, and I'd have to go see it again, but from my memory of only seeing it, the one time through, is that you could see different, eras of kids' stuff.
There was a tricycle in there.
Yeah, the way the bikes looked were like more the 50s, which would have been, I guess, the 27 years, which would have been 58. Which is when the book and the miniseries take place. Because this was 85, right?
I think it was actually like 88, 89.
Okay.
Based on the movies that were playing at the movie theater.
Okay. But still, those tricycles were about that age. But as I mentioned earlier, outside of the part where he dances, I didn't buy into that. But everything else about that moment when you cut the Beverly... with him is really, really affecting.
What did you make of the kiss? Ben kissing Bev and waking her out of her trance.
I thought it was kind of cliched. I was hoping it wouldn't work.
That would have been pretty good. But
there was a moment where they thought it wasn't going to work, right?
Right. But even then, that was funny because, the kid, when he does it, the kid's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You don't just kiss a girl for no reason.
Right. That was one of the reasons why I was glad I read the book. And I hate to be like, oh, well, if you read the book, you know this. But I explained it to myself in terms of, in the book, there's a bunch of instances in where, and they do touch upon in the miniseries where, things work or how you're supposed to defeat it works simply because you believe it will work. So, the idea of the, in the miniseries in the book, they decide that they're going to make some silver pellets and they're going to shoot it with
slingshot.
A slingshot. And it works because they believe it would work. What's another one? Eddie's inhaler. He shoots it at it when he's a kid and says it's battery acid and it is affected as if it were battery acid simply because Eddie believes it to be battery acid. So it's kind of the power of the imagination. I mean, because Pennywise himself is the manifestation of all his fears. So how to defeat him is the exact inverse, your imagination. And, I chalked it up to that. Ben, it worked because Ben thought it would work. And they don't really go into it too much. They don't really go into it too much in this movie. And I thought they could have. They do it a little bit right before it, when, or right after, I should say, I think it was right after, when Bill shoots Georgie with the cattle gun.
Yeah, it's empty at that point.
Because Mike says it's empty, but he still shoots it,
yeah,
and it still works as if it was loaded.
And I didn't understand why that didn't work. Now it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because he wanted it to work. He thought it would work.
Yeah. And I mean, in a literary standpoint, that's kind of a cheat. It's like, it's like, and then magic happens.
Yeah.
But
I guess, but it still makes sense.
Yeah. And in the, it works in the context. And I, that was one place where I felt like they could have expanded a little bit more to at least sell that. I mean, I would have watched a 3-hour cut of this movie, to be honest with you. So I would have been all right with them expanding on that even more.
Yeah, that makes that scene make more sense. And yeah, they were leaning into the whole, I thought they were going to get really deep with the whole Ben being jealous of Bill because Beverly seemed more into him.
Yeah, and that's actually something that they, again, talk about the novel. They touch upon on the novel. It's just kind of like I guess they all kind of have their crushes on, but Ben specifically has a crush on Beverly. But he kind of like resigns himself. Like, well, of course she'd be in love with Bill. That's the way it's supposed to be.
He's the hero.
He's the leader. He's the hero. Of course she would be in love with him.
And the fat kid doesn't get anything.
Yeah.
Because he's fat.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's how I took it. Like, of course she's going to fall for Bill, because Bill's, you know, he's the skinny, heroic kid, and Ben's the fat, lovable loser.
Yeah. And Ben's such a good character. they were all so good in it.
I think they touched on all of them, and they gave them all their unique personalities.
Yeah, I think Mike is the most Mike and Stan kind of are the most underwritten ones. I think Mike will probably have a bigger role in the second one. He's a huge.
Is Stan the Jewish kid?
Stan's a Jewish kid.
Okay. Yes. His but fear was pretty good though. I like his
fear. And I think his role, it was limited, but it was important because he was the, you know, he was just like, fuck you guys. Like, yeah, let's not do this.
You're the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Mike should have a bigger role in Chapter 2, because he is, when they're adults, he plays an enormous role.
I'm also interested to see what they do with the bully.
Because
he fell down the well, mm-hmm, but that's it. They don't shoot. Does he live? Does he die? Because he's in the second, when they grow up, he's in the same asylum, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If I had to guess, I would say they're going to lose him in the story, in Chapter 2. He might make Pennywise might make an appearance as him.
Okay.
But there's another character in Chapter 2 I think they could combine with him. Not really combine him with, because, you know, it's two separate characters, but, like, he can lift right out, and there's another character that can do the heavy lifting that he would do in that part in Chapter 2. I'm talking about Beverly's husband. Does he make Tom? I think his name is Tom.
Is he abusive?
She basically marries her father.
Yeah, I remember that.
But he kind of does. There's in the book, in the adult parts, Bill is married to this actress, because Bill's like a famous writer. Right. He's married to an actress, and like Tom randomly runs into his wife, because they both come back. They both follow their spouses to Derry. And he recognizes her because she's an actress, and he realizes that that's Bill's wife. So he, in the book, he brings her to the sewers, but then he just completely disappears. Like, it's like completely, it's an abandoned storyline in the middle of the book.
You think King just realized it was going nowhere, and he, Well, what was Richie Cunningham's brother?
Yeah, they kind of pull over Richie Cunningham's brother.
Yeah, he goes over stairs and never comes down.
Yeah, it's a really odd moment in the book where it's just kind of like, oh, well, that guy's not in this movie anymore or this book anymore. And I think they'll combine the efforts of Tom and adult Henry Bowers into kind of a more fleshed out character.
That'd be interesting to see.
If I had to guess.
I've read that chapter 2 is going to be much darker.
And I read that too.
More terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, as a 30 plus year old, it's kind of hard to be terrified in a movie, but I am all for a darker, because this is pretty dark.
Do you think they do any liberties and do any flashbacks to maybe? Stuff?
They definitely mentioned that there will be flashbacks.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking in terms of actors that may blow up over the next couple years. You know, Sophia Lillis, Beverly Marsh will probably do that. So having her name still attached,
mm-hmm.
you know, would be a bonus.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think you gotta tie back.
And plus, Finn will have Stranger Things 2.
Yep, that's coming out in a month and a half.
Yeah,
Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you'll have to. I would think that if those two end up taking off, you know, having them even attached to it, you know, might, you know, be something to draw it in. I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it'll serve two purposes as well, because you'll get to flesh out more of the childhood aspects. Maybe you'll give Mike and Stan a little more fleshing out. But at the same time, the adult parts that happens over a span of 24 hours, I mean,
yeah,
that's a pretty straightforward part of the book.
And
I think in the miniseries, too.
And Richie was the least fleshed out of the kids.
And, yeah, I mean, he didn't really have an emotional turn. He was just a comic relief. And I don't really know how much you get at. He's a two-dimensional character at best in the novel. He doesn't really have any emotional weight in that story either. So I don't know how much to expect from, you know, turning him into a fully three-dimensional character, but he'll at least be there for some laughs.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to start wrapping it up. What's everybody's scores?
I'm giving it a 9.
Mark's going to give it a 8.725.
Yeah. Just because apparently there's rules with this stuff, I'll round up and give it a 9. But my heart of hearts says 8.75, but
it's not a real score.
You can't live in this pseudo world of yours, Mark.
Yeah, I'll give you halves. There's halves and full points.
You gotta commit.
Yeah,
I will err on the side of this was an amazing movie, and put it in a 9 range.
Yeah. That's 3 9s across the board. Yeah, no, I fully enjoyed this movie. I mean, I wouldn't say, like you said, Dan, earlier. I'm a 32-year-old man. I haven't been scared by a horror movie in 20 years, maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this movie did a good job of, like, having these moments where, like, it was exhilarating. It was like, oh, my God, this scene's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, puts you on the edge of the seat. But, I mean, I wouldn't say it was scared. But everything else was, you know, so enjoyable.
Let me put it this way. I've seen, you know, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know I'm a huge Marvel guy or comic book guy. This is the only movie I would seriously consider seeing again in the theater.
Yeah.
That's, you know, Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, Wonder Woman. I probably won't see Thor more than once, I mean, unless I'm blown away by it, but if this movie, if I had to put top three, I'd probably this movie first, Logan second. I'm torn between Guardian and Spider-Man, but this is clear number one.
Mm-hmm. I think Mark mentioned earlier, he said that this was right behind Dunkirk. I'm the same with him. I think a third would be Get Out, and then I think Spider-Man. But yeah, no, this is top five. It'll probably stay that way by the end of the year, unless amazing movies come out between now and then. I know Star Wars is coming out, and
Disaster Artist.
Was that?
Disaster Artist.
Oh, Disaster Artist. Yeah, that looks pretty great.
I want to give that trailer. I want to give that trailer a standing ovation when it was done.
I was so upset that I didn't see it before the movie, but I might go see that in the theater. It looks great.
Yeah,
overall, it was phenomenal. I've told many people to go see it. I would recommend it highly.
Trying to drag Lynn to go see it, because I would totally see this again.
Yeah, I'm trying to get Jen to see if he refuses. I even offered to throw in Buffalo Wild Wings, and that didn't seal the deal.
Oh, throw McDonald's.
McDonald's.
I got her.
I think if I put in both, I might be able to get. I'm gonna have to check, but I definitely want to see this again.
Yeah. Yes. And unless there are any further comments, I think that's gonna do it for us.
No, outside of us just saying, go see it.
Go see it.
Yeah.
Even if
you've seen it, and you obviously, hopefully, you've had going through this spoiler cast, just go see it again. Yeah, it's really good. I think it's better to see it in the movies if you're going to take somebody to see their reaction than if you watched it with them at home.
Just like
the sound in the theater will make it a much better experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for us. We are the Main Damey Podcast at themaindamey.com. You can check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/themaindamey, on Facebook at facebook.com/themaindamey. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit us an email at themaindamey@gmail.com. Dan, you are at daquino122.
Look at you. You got it.
That was it?
That was it. You nailed it.
Nice.
First try.
Nice. Mark is at Off the Mark Tweet.
And also, the Extra Life donation page is live. So if you go
yes.
to tinyurl.com/TheMainDameyEX, you will get to be able to donate to our charity thing for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Only plug for it in this whole thing. November 18th, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Watch the preview video and read the description we have over on our Extra Life page for full details.
Yep. Mark, you want to plug the Twitch? twitch.tv/TheMainDamey?
Yeah. Just that's where the marathon will be. I've been a little more sporadic in terms of the days that I stream. I try to keep up with it on the Twitter. I would have done it tonight, but, you know, we had this podcast to record, and I thought that this would be more important than the one or two people that maybe come see me play Super Mario RPG. So we'll probably do that, the next day, which would be well after this podcast goes up. But yeah, keep an eye on the Twitter just in case if we change it from Wednesday nights at any point. So.
Okay. Great. Yeah. And, that's it for us. I believe so. Oh, I'm at AntDelbeck on Twitter.
There you go, the captain. Got to get you out there, man.
Yeah. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DelVecchio telling Jason Lively to go fuck himself.